Hello?
Lauren, hey,
Yo.
Welcome to Anchor Podcasting.
Thank you for having me, Zach.
Yeah, so if we want to get started, I can edit out any of the beginnings. I typically don't, just because we jump right in, but do you have any questions before we get started?
No, let's do it. Don't cut anything out. Let's keep it raw.
Let's keep it raw. I like it. Well, why don't you just, first off, introduce how we know each other.
So we know each other from Drake University. And to the listeners that aren't familiar with Drake, it's a private university here in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah. We had at least one, I think, with Adkins, but maybe more classes that, you stood out. And how do you pronounce your last name?
Do you want the English version or the old country version?
Both. Definitely both.
So everybody says Blažević, but it's pronounced Blažević.
Blažević. Okay. Yeah, I say Lukasevich, and then if somebody asks for a more proper pronunciation, I say Vukasevic.
Yeah, yeah. So. Slavic languages, they're rough and ugly.
They really are. Yeah. So what are you up to these days, Mark?
Working and looking how to build brand and help. I imagine everybody is. Sales are obviously slowing down for many people. So what better time than to help as many people as you can, do cool things like what you're doing with the podcast. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just trying to stay sane, stuck at home.
Yeah. What exactly do you do at GForge? Like, introduce GForge and kind of your role there.
Yeah, so GForge is a Iowa native computer software company. We've been around almost 20 years. And we do everything collaboration. When it comes to collaboration software, we provide those features to help people, especially in times like this, work remotely. We have the tools for teams to collaborate remotely. We're heavy in the aerospace defense industries, but I feel like we have our tentacles everywhere. So we're in nonprofit and education as well.
Interesting. Yeah. How did I'm assuming there was one big contract that really turned GForge from a one or two man shop into the enterprise that it is today. You know, kind of how they get their start?
Well, we're still pretty small and nimble, I would say. We're privately held, but we do have some large contracts, such as the General Electrics and Radions and Siemens of the world. So I would say our largest customer is General Electric with a little over 16,000 users.
Wow. Yep. And what is the, like, not being a daily user, how does GForge compare to other software that people might be familiar with?
So we go up against a lot of bigger fish. Ironically, we've been around longer than a lot of our competition, but just staying private, small, and nimble, we're not focusing so much on just ad spend and getting our name out there. It's kind of changing now because you and me are actually planning on doing some things in regards to that, but we differentiate in many ways. So we believe in giving the user everything out of the box. So a lot of our competitors, they have a a la carte feature type of menu. So some collaboration solutions sell similar features such as GForge, but they all have their own pricing, and this to configure those features to work all together. And we just find this approach inflexible. It means you need to know what features each project needs ahead of time. And when you start a project, you might not know that. So we'd rather give you everything out the box and you can toggle those features on and off. And then we also like to think that we have the best in breed features. So other organizations oftentimes unknowingly over time end up buying multiple products from multiple vendors providing specific features. And it's the same inflexibility, such as providing an a la carte style of features where you're not working with a single vendor. It makes integration difficult, and just your overall TCO in the long run expensive and hard to work with. We try to keep it all one solution, one contract, one point of contact, and just really simplify this approach to collaborating remotely or working with your team remotely using these tools.
And let's I'm curious to get into that, and that's part of the reason why we're talking today. But if someone does have any questions about this, do you want to just put out your email or phone number so that they can contact you?
Yeah, definitely. So my email is my first name, M as in Mary, O-R-E-N, at gforgegroup, gforgegroup.com, Morin at gforgegroup.com, and my phone number is 515-664-9083.
And the reason why... you'll have to kind of tell me who your ideal customer or client would be, but I can imagine that right now is you're probably seeing a lot higher rate of utilization than before when it, you know, digital collaboration may have been optional, but now it's almost forced.
Yeah. And that's exactly what we're trying to do amidst the whole pandemic. We're actually blessed where we're in a financial situation where we can provide GForge for free, and that's what we're doing. So we're trying to get everyone up and running at least remotely. So for a majority, if not all of, you know, the white collar world out there, if you have been forced to work from home and you need tools where you can interact with your teammates, whether that be chat or video, you want a place to share documents, store knowledge, like wiki files, run tickets or a service desk, just basically anything to begin a project, plan it, build it, track it to deployment. That's what GForge does. And we're trying to get GForge in everybody's hand now because of what's going on.
Yeah, what other, I guess, as the last month has progressed, what sort of things are you guys talking about in the office in terms of how to approach, you know, either new or existing clients given this very odd, unique circumstance?
So I feel like, again, we're in a good spot. When you look at our customers, we have a lot of larger accounts. Again, like the Bank of Montreal and the U.S. National Security Agency, NSA, and we have a lot of these larger customers where it keeps us sitting tight and comfortable, but our goal is to just give people the best features that we can possibly do. So we're just working on getting GForge to be great. We're never satisfied. We're always trying to improve it. So what we have been doing recently is setting up, and if anyone's interested, please reach out. We have been having virtual meetings with CTOs, COOs, CIOs, project managers, software developers, anyone that understands our space. And our president, Tony Bibbs, and I have been just hosting these one-on-one 30-minute demos where we show our product and we have these folks that understand the product, give us feedback and just tell us how they think we can improve, you know, for their day-to-day work, like what they're seeing out in the trenches with their teams. So it's as simple as, you know, having the CTO tell us, yeah, that feature works great with my team. My team's always pissed off that this doesn't work with our collaboration tools. I'd suggest this and that. So we've been collaborating and partnering with a lot of folks on just new integrations, new things to keep streamlining, consolidating our process of delivering these tools to our users.
And this next question may, you know, if you're not interested in product design or product marketing, this isn't just a sales pitch. This is what I do professionally. So I'm going to start asking maybe a couple questions that are directly related to the usability. But, you know, whenever you're using a web application, you know, you especially with, let's say, Facebook is an example that everyone knows. Mm-hmm. When they first started out, they had very few features available. And then you basically have, let's call it 100 interactions where you need to make the user feel at ease, informed, inspired to some sense, and safe. Like what they're doing is right and they're not jeopardizing their information. What sort of feedback are you getting? Because to answer from my perspective, is this software short-term or long-term? Like, are you building out scaffolding for a temp structure or for downtown skyrise? You know what I mean?
And then correct me if I'm wrong. So are you asking if users are taking on GeForge as a temporary fix or something they can build off of and use for years and years and years on end and build portfolios out of it and basically run departments through it?
Yeah, I guess less of a question, more of just a prompt, because when you start using a technology like that, it really is an investment. You're investing time and the loss that you will incur is changing, which is why a lot of people don't necessarily like operating in Google Docs or something like that, because if someone leaves the organization, there may be need to switch, but your potential client may not be using like simple free software that everyone's currently using.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and hopefully my answer makes sense. So GeForge is huge on never prescribing anything to our clients. So we have a lot of users that use different approaches when it comes to getting work done. We have folks that use, I don't know, Agile, Scrum, waterfall methodologies of project management, whatever it may be. And we got annoyed of seeing competition basically make people conform to a certain way or process of doing things. So our templates are totally, let's just say we don't really have them, which is a double-edged sword, right? Because there are some people then that want to use GeForge and they're like, oh crap, I have to train now and I have to make my own templates so it can follow our process of doing things. But that's where we come in and try to hold the user's hand and help them create these templates. We help with training. You know, we hold, especially with the new folks that aren't even used to collaboration tools, we like to hold weekly reviews, quarterly, semi-annually, whatever makes sense for the user. So I guess it's good in a sense that we're not telling the customer how they have to use our product, but then yes, that does require more investment from the user of time and resources to make this, like you said, huge investment, because sometimes it's tough, and that's why we're trying to get in front of customers before they get these tools. Because if you have all this knowledge and data into a tool, for lack of better words, it's so shitty to have to export all that data and then put it into a new system. So we're really trying to get in front of people before they begin down that process of using tools. And that reminds me of a blog that our CTO, Michael Tutte, actually made. He wrote up an article called Maslow for Startups, I believe. So I think a lot of the listeners, Abraham Maslow, he was like a psychologist professor, and he had that hierarchy of human needs, where on the bottom it's psychological needs, and then it keeps going up, and then love and belonging and self-actualization and whatnot. we try to take the same approach, as weird as it may sound, with our users, because our features are so rich and so heavy with it's a very powerful tool, in my opinion. Which is why we give you all these features, but you can literally toggle all of them off so you don't see them. So if you're a startup, you know, you need the most basic level of business development. You're a small company, a very small group. You might just need a chat feature and a ticketing feature. But as you grow your company and you add more data, because everything's data now, the more data you're putting into it, then you might want to turn on some of those features and start using, you know, milestone features to track your projects and sprints. And then that wiki page, which you were talking about, where we're heavy on our wiki features. So let's say a CTO of an organization has all these manuals and different types of instructions set out of how to do a certain project or whatnot, and he stores that in the wiki page. So tomorrow, if that CTO passes away, takes another job, gets fired, the new CTO can come in and actually have all this data ready for them to use and kind of pick up where they left off at. So that's an important feature. And
I would assume that the biggest, the line of delineation between someone who is or isn't considering something like GForge would be, are you in a comfortable enough position to have someone who can dedicate that time to it?
Yep.
Because I was working with a 22-person company, and they had to start becoming that type of organization that was doing the kind of, if person X was hit by a bus, where is that information stored? And I was shocked that it wasn't taking place, but, you know, it's hard to spend time or invest time in situations that are, you know, maybe highly unlikely, but also highly undesirable to even think about. But for software companies in particular.
Exactly. So a lot of this is heavily leaning on that whole software development, engineering, architect world. So with the features.
So let's transition, and probably should have covered this earlier, but there is no format for this podcast for anyone who's listening. but like, let's talk about more and tell me what you're doing in Iowa and what you're doing kind of recreationally, maybe that has changed in the last 4 to 6 weeks.
So Morin in the last 4 to 6 weeks,
like I mentioned, are you doing, I don't know if you work out or I'm looking for recipe ideas, so I don't know if you have
I get you. So with this whole transition, now my wife Adela is working from home as well, so we have been snacking a lot throughout the day, and I'm not used to that. When I start working, like I forget about eating until I hear my stomach growling. But yeah, so there has been a lot of snacking going on. I have put down the routine of exercising in the last month, which I am disappointed about in my own self. But I kept it strong for the longest time. And then I went on a family trip. I went on vacation with some close family members, and that's when my working out went to shit. But since then, yeah, since we came back and the whole pandemic blew up and everything, a lot of eating. And if you're interested in recipes, recently, so I invested in a kick-ass slow cooker, and I got some wings. Me and my wife love hot wings. So we tried out the slow cooker, threw in the wings for an hour and a half, and then threw in the buffalo sauce, and then let it simmer for another hour and a half, and then threw it in the oven to get a little crispy towards the end, and that was our yesterday lunch. So
that when you go to pull them like out of the pan or out of the crock pot, and the bone
it has comes to out, and the chicken it has right to man there. If the meat's not coming off the bone, it's not, that's not the real deal.
Yeah. What do you use for seasoning?
I actually went up the street. I live in, whoever's familiar with Des Moines, I live in Urbandale, and I'm really close to the chicken coop, and I always liked the sauce that they used for their buffalo wings. So I literally called them up, again, just trying to support the local businesses around here. And I told them, I was like, yo, you guys have some kick-ass sauce. I don't know if you sell it, but can I stop by and just grab it? And sure enough, when I pulled up, the guy had like a styrofoam cup of their special sauce. I was like, all right, here's the money. Let me take the sauce and I'm going to try it out. And it was a success. So they had everything ready for me. I just threw in the wings and then threw in the sauce on top of it.
There we go. Have you ever tried like a coffee or bourbon, like a glaze on
it? I have not. A coffee?
Just a little bit. It's the same. You could get it with like a brown sugar. All you need is a little bit to modify that flavor ever so slightly. I'm not like a great chef on the grill. Like I can't, you know, I'm not very versatile. Like I can't make the best steak you've ever had. But when it comes to chicken wings, yeah, I just like to experiment with like a little bit of lemon or orange rind.
I've done that.
But definitely try out. Yeah. It's good. So what else do you guys like to cook?
My wife will, she likes to cook a lot of the food from the old country. So pita type of pastries, mm-hmm. and whoever's familiar with like the Balkan region, we have a lot of Mediterranean style food. So I know a lot of people know what Greek, and it's pronounced in so many different ways. I don't even know how to say the correct way anymore. Gyros, gyros, we say gyros. So food similar to that, were just a lot of pita bread, a lot of olives, a lot of either hummus or some type of Balkan mayonnaise, and for sauces and meats, lamb. We're big on lamb.
What do you use for preparing the lamb?
So when we make lamb, like the traditional, and you'll see a lot of Bosnian Americans doing this, you think that they have a dog on a stick and they're cooking it. It's not a dog, it's a lamb. So like a rotisserie type of lamb, where we go to some farms close by and we prepare the lamb, we skin it, and then just throw on a bunch of salt and put it on a stick and twirl it above a fire for a few hours. And I'm telling you, it doesn't sound good, but it is the best lamb you will ever have in your life.
It's sounds incredible. I've tried to cook just lamb like in a crock pot, and I have only tried it once. I can't say I've tried more than that because I overcooked it and I didn't realize how easy it was to overcook lamb, but doing a slow rotisserie is, I mean, a lot more work, but I'm sure it's incredible.
Yeah. And
do you make your own? Is it like a tzatziki sauce as well?
We do not, but I have friends and family members that'll make it.
Yeah, that's a good menu you have going. So tell me, I guess I'll just let you wrap up with whatever you want, but like, what's more in planning for the next 30 days is my last question.
The next 30 days, I've been doing some, and I feel like everyone has, right? We're stuck at home, we're self-reflecting, and you get all kinds of thoughts in your head, and I feel like I have been very scatterbrained recently, just trying to work on a lot of different sales and marketing type of efforts for GForge. And I have to remind myself to stop, because when you work from home, you kind of forgot to, you forget to take that full hour lunch. You forget to take breaks throughout the day. Because you're at home and you're comfortable and you might be in your sweats and you forget that you're working, but you're really working, and you just gotta kind of stop. So the next 30 days, I still plan on working. I want to refocus myself and take on tasks in a more processed type of approach, where I'm not all over the place and doing 100 things at once. Maybe lose quality. Along with that, just it's not all about just more time with your daughter, my wife. Try our best to socialize from the rest of the family. I'm putting up a fence, so I am going to work on my backyard and make a freaking like a mini amusement park for my 2-year-old. Just wow. At home, and why not?
But yeah,
you know.
I think that's how all amusement parks are built. Why not?
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Well, anything else you want to add before we go?
If anyone is, I connect with people, so I'm take off my sales hat right now when I say this. You don't have to be in need of collaboration tools to reach out to me. If you go get my phone, my email, if you want to connect on LinkedIn, I think my URL is /name. I'm somewhat new, so if anybody wants to connect on Twitter and teach me how to actually use this thing, my it's at Blazvik Morn to connect with me, so please do, and let's connect, let's have virtual coffees and get to know one another, help each other out in any way we can in these weird times. Hat back on now. If anybody's confused and lost and they don't know how to work remotely, please reach out and we'll help you throughout that process.
In having conversations off of like in person that aren't recorded like this, I've found that everyone seems to have more time more time than they anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think companies are realizing that employees are far more productive when they are able to control their schedule. And now it's kind of like, especially I know some teachers who get a lot of work done really quickly and without having to deal with the hassle of kids, is that's kind of offset to the parents now. There's just more more time available to like build an amusement park or build a fence. So, you know, really no excuses now. And people are probably wondering if they should start investing in learning a new hobby. Like I was just talking with someone about gunzoogling.
What's
you've never?
No.
It's on Wikipedia's list of 675 hobbies, which may have been why I found it. And gunzoogling is a hobby. I'm so glad there's a word for this. For people who watch boats pass down the canals of the United Kingdom, but do not
participate. What the hell?
So
that is crazy.
You know,
I'm going to check that out. Gunzoogling.
Well, a lot of people think that they have hobby ideas, but they're really, really irrational. So, if someone needs something that's a bit more productive, definitely check out Gunzoogling. This is, I'll just end this whole episode with a little shout out to Bennett Hansen. So
definitely.
I think he's going to be coming on soon.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks, Warren. Appreciate it. And we'll talk again in a month.
Thank you for your time, Zach. Hope everyone's well and in good health.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah. Thanks.